She's doing Sunday school. Yeah. Yeah, we all get drafted every now and then. So you could be next. So I'm going to be in with the Sunday school on August 25th, and we're going to be talking about airplanes. We'll be talking about flying, and they're going to...
Is your airplane finished?
Well, it's not. It's finished, but it's not put together. So I'm going to bring the tail section so that they can sort of see it. It'll be cool. So I've been started a series on five principles of unity. It's kind of a foundations course. I'm doing a foundations course on what we espouse in unity, so that it's important that we understand what we stand for, what we're about, and to kind of appreciate that, because it really is about our own empowerment, our own capacity to make a difference in our world, because the world needs all the help it can get. So think of the five principles as not what we're telling you to believe this. In unity, we don't tell you to believe anything other than what belief does in consciousness. Belief becomes a way in which we begin to take in our life experience. So if our belief is the glass is half empty, then that's going to be our experience. But instead, we talk about what we espouse and invite you to consider the validity of that. And so the first principle that I talked about last week was there's only one presence and one power active in my life and in the universe, God the good. And then there are the exceptions, right? We sometimes have exceptions. And so if you have an exception, and certainly we can think of some exceptions that live in our world experience, our human family's experience in recent days. If you have an exception in your life to the principle that it's all God, it's all good going on, then it's because we are not in alignment or fully embodying principle number two. And principle number two states that our essence is of God, and therefore we are inherently good. This God essence was fully expressed in Jesus the Christ. So what we're saying, therefore, is that if there's just God going on, and it's all good, then our essence, our who we are in our heart of hearts, is the same goodness. And as we look to the life and teachings of Jesus Christ, we see that he expressed that essence completely. Another way of looking at this that is a little bit more in alignment with how I like to think about things is that, let's think of it this way, our essence is of God, and therefore we are inherently worthy. This God essence was fully expressed in Jesus as the one. So this is what I'm wanting us to consider, that as we aspire to live in the context of our spiritual essence, as Jesus demonstrated, then in essence we are the one unto our own life. Just as Jesus, as the Christ, was the Christ of God unto his world, we are the Christ of God unto our world. But we don't think in terms of the Christ, that's a little religious. And so we need to have practical ways in which we can experience what it's like to have our life committed to the expression of that essence. And that's what it means to be the Christ, a commitment to expressing that essence in every place in which that opportunity exists. And so to be the one unto our own life is what this second principle is all about. If there's all good, all God going on, then it means that we are essential to the awakening and betterment of the world. And this is important because we have to reconcile what's going on in the world with the essence that we are here to espouse and to bring forth, because it is what makes a difference in the presence of the horrific things that are happening. I'll unpack that a little bit more, because sometimes it's hard for us to wonder, well, if there's just God and all good, how is it possible that we have mass shootings? And I can't tell you how many times I've been asked to speak at anniversaries of 9/11 and try to reconcile this dimension. If there's only God, if it's all good, how is it possible that we have such horrific experiences in our human family? And so our journey through reconciling that principle is really to kind of reset ourselves in the context of who we really are. What is the truth of us? And then let's see how that truth of us gets kind of frustrated with being able to express and make a difference in the world. And so as we look at this principle that we are the one, that's the default place that we need to be in the context of really owning our spiritual selves, our essence, the reality that there's a dimension of us that is God-made, and if we're not experiencing that sense of what it means to be in alignment with this greater sense of oneness and wholeness, bless you, and this capacity to be fulfilled and empowered, if we're not experiencing that, then we're living in a different reality. It doesn't deny the reality that there's just God. It just means that we're acting as if that's not the truth. And when we are in that way of living in separation, that's how it's possible for us to feel as if life is against us. Because when we're connected to our own sense of well-being and worth, we can have someone judge us, and we know it's not about us. But when we're feeling separate and apart, when we feel unworthy or out of not good enough, then we react to what's going on, and then we have evidence that there's something or someone out there against us, and how could I be the one if I'm having this experience? So these are important issues that we have to unpack and get kind of through, because the world is desperate for us being unto our own life the one, because the truth is that the things that we see in the world could not happen if we knew our own worth. Could not happen if we knew that we were sent by God to be unto our world the one, through which that which is ours to express can be brought forth in this world. And so part of our challenge is to kind of recognize that we are sent here, we are here in this world on purpose, but we have to own that. Now, I don't know if you've ever said this to yourself before, I can't believe that I've got to be the one to do this. Have you ever said that? Well, of course, we say that a lot when we're handed experiences that, we don't want. I have to do this. I'm talking about being the one unto our own life because there's nobody else. There is nobody else but you. And you are there right now. You are present in the moment when it can happen. When the divine presence shows up, you are the avenue through which it happens. And so we are called to be the one unto our life. And it's going to pull us and stretch us in ways that compel us to have to own our worthiness in order to be able to answer this call. And so it's important for us to reconcile the part of us that is pushing away this beckoning that you matter, you are important, you're needed, you're necessary. But that doesn't come alive until we open ourselves to being unto our life the one. Okay, I guess I'm it this time. So, there's a story about, I got this story right here. I don't read, so I'm just gonna have to kind of look at this. Pretend I know what this is talking about. So there's this monastery that went into decline. Sort of like all the churches that are happening right now. 9 out of 10 churches are in decline. And so the decline meant that there were the new monks were leaving, they were dissatisfied. The villagers from town weren't paying any attention to what was going on. It seemed like it was dead. And though the elderly monks that were left over were complaining about all the things that were wrong, who wasn't showing up, and why things that were the way that they were, and the abbot was at a loss to know what to do. The abbot had a friend, a rabbi, that retired and lived near the monastery, and so he visited the rabbi and asked him if he had any ideas as to what might stop the decline. And so the rabbi said, well, I got to tell you that the Messiah is among you. And the abbot said, what do you mean? How's it possible? He was just thinking about Brother Samuel or Brother Albert and how awful and stinky they are and how the whole dynamic of their monastery was so negative and so impossible to imagine that among them was the Messiah. And so for instance, they said, surely not Brother Albert. He's always muttering to himself, and when he's not muttering to himself, he's being rude. But then he's always the first to look after us when we're sick. What about Brother Leo? He's always dirty and he smells bad too. And then again, because he's working out in the field and he's cultivating those delicious vegetables that we all like. And I can't believe it's Brother Thomas. He spills ink all over the desk where we write out the scriptures, but yet his drawings and decorations of the scripts are so vivid and beautiful. The point is that as they wondered amongst themselves how it would be possible that someone among them could be the Messiah, they all of a sudden started noticing different things about each other. And well, maybe Brother Samuel is, but maybe, and so the whole shift of being in that wonderment that the Messiah is among us began to shift the energy. Bless you. And then new people started noticing how people felt differently. And then all of a sudden the monastery started attracting younger individuals interested in commitment to a spiritual path. And eventually the monastery thrived. And so the story, as you can imagine, is all about acting as if we're in the presence of the Messiah and being willing to see what that reveals as we're willing to be in the experience of knowing that among us is the one. Now, the word Messiah means the anointed one. We, in the religious tradition, it could mean savior, but we back that away and see that it is the anointed one, the one that is here to mirror our sense of worthiness, our sense of capacity to be unto our own life, the avenue through which God expresses. Remember, we are the way of God or we're in the way of God. And so as we recognize this, that we're living in the presence of Spirit, but it is a veil unto us because we're seeing through the eyes of separation, through our own sense of not enough, through our own sense of inadequacy or unworthiness. But when we eliminate those filters, those limiting beliefs, all of a sudden we can see the possibility of God among us.
God had a name, what would it be, and would you call it to his face if you were faced with him in all his glory? What would you ask if you had just one question?
And God is
morning, Jane. I come down the stairs and I'm still thinking about my talk, and Jane says, well, how do you find the Messiah in the shooter? How do you find the Messiah in the shooter? And you know, you can't answer that question in the context of trying to make it right or wrong, good or bad. You have to answer it in the context of if we really own the truth of who we are, if we really know our worth. Think about this. Would it be possible for anybody who really knew who they are, their worth, their essence, could it be possible for any individual with that knowledge to do such an act? No. And so the only way we can make sense of this, and the only way that we can make it mean something other than the tragedy that it is, and it be something that redeems a part of us that is being lost, is for us to know that the real issue is we're living in the disconnect. We're living as if we're separate and apart from God and not aligned with the field of infinite possibilities that is seeking to birth through us a new world. And so part of the struggle that we have is to not get drawn into the horror of what's happening, but to get drawn into what is ours to do in the presence of that outward reflection that we have yet to really accomplish this work. And so we're in a journey. We're a part of a process, an unfolding, a birth. And we're all on the transition team. And we have to hold a kind of watch that doesn't draw us into being modulated by the story of separation. We have to hold on to the principle of our oneness, of our connection, of interbeing, of our relationship to all of life, and know that as we extricate our awareness out of this programming of the belief in separation, that there is a different reality that we can tap into. Okay, I'm going to tell this story. I've told this story before. Okay, go back one. So, 2002, I had a near-death experience. I ate something I was allergic to, and I went into anaphylactic shock. And that means that your larynx, your windpipe swells shut, and you could suffocate to death if you don't have any support. And so here I was in an experience where I was suffocating to death, and I was welcoming the experience because my previous wife, Nan, had just passed 3 weeks earlier of brain cancer. And so in the throes of my own bereavement, suffocating to death, I heard a voice. I heard her voice. And she said, "Gary, you're not going to follow me. You have work to do." And so here I was trying to be in this experience of still suffocating to death, but knowing that it's I was going to recover. And then I heard a different voice. A voice as plain, as clear as the sound of my voice is to you right now, and that voice said, "Gary, you are the one to bring peace on earth." So what do you do with a voice like that? oxygen deprivation. I'm having a peak experience. I'm hearing things. And it was so interesting to watch myself push away this voice. It was interesting because at the time I was director of peacemaking services for the entire Unity movement. And here I was pushing away this voice that was calling to me to be the one. And so in that moment I said, "Okay." Because, you know, there's no instruction manual for being the one, so no one knows how to be the one. You just have to be willing to be it. And you also recognize that you're not the one all by yourself, but you still have to be willing to be the only one and to still make that intention. So I said yes to Spirit. And the very next day, I received a phone call from an organization called the Omni Center for Peace, Justice, and Ecology. And the man's name was Dick Bennett, and he asked me, because I was director of peacemaking services for the entire Unity movement, what was Unity's position regarding the impending war in Iraq? And in that moment, as it is on the slide, I said, "Unity does not take stands. We have no position." And immediately that moment, my heart sank. I got sick to my stomach. How is it possible that we, having one of the most profound transformative teachings on the planet, how is it possible that we're still not in the conversation as to whether or not it's okay to use war as a way of managing our problems? And so in that moment of regret and embarrassment and my own personal anger over not having our movement was not a voice in the conversation. I contacted the leaders of the Association of Unity Churches, as it was called that time, and interestingly enough, Claire Austin was on the Board of Trustees as the chair, who Claire was former minister of this ministry. And I pleaded with them for us as a Unity movement to have some statement about what's happening in the world. And so I got back a word, and they said, well, could you please propose something for us to consider? You know what happens when you're the one that complains? So, okay, I didn't know what our position should be. I just knew that not having a position was the issue. And so I sat on my computer, and all of a sudden, the Spirit flowed through me. And two statements came out. I sent them both off. And immediately I got word back that they appreciated my contribution, and they actually adopted one of my statements. They didn't adopt my favorite one, though. Okay, and that statement went like this. Remember, this is about Unity's stance regarding the impending war in Iraq. Don't blow up shit or kill people. They really liked that one, but they couldn't go with it. And instead, they went with this statement. Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names of God, the many paths of God, the many ways of worshiping God, for we know that there is only one power and one presence that is God, and that God loves us all equally. It is the position of the International Association of Unity Churches and Unity Worldwide Headquarters to urge all nations, their leaders, and their people to turn to God during these challenging times and pursue peace, not war, because this is what honors the God of all of our faith traditions. Unity stands for peace in our lifetime. That's what we stand for. And we say this statement on Sundays, every Sunday, as we before we begin to welcome and greet everyone. And it's important because this intent for inspiring people to really make a difference in the world lives in the context of our knowing our purpose, knowing our worth, knowing who we've come here to be. And the reason why that's important is because that's what's going on in the world is calling us to be that presence. And so as you are engaged in this wonderment of looking at how you're being called right now to be the one unto your own life, you know, as we as a ministry recognize that, you know, we're evolving into a ministry practice that has the fulfillment of purpose as our purpose. In other words, transforming lives, every one of us in this community, that's what we're after. A life transformed, because once we free ourselves from all those limiting beliefs, our sense of not enough, a sense that we don't matter, all of a sudden what we have left is the knowing that we are the one unto our life. And so this is integral to our being able to be a force that makes a difference in the presence of all the craziness that is happening in our world today. So finally, I want to close with going over the discussion questions for those of you who are using our conversation during our Sunday talks as a part of your interaction, your small group. So I'd like you to begin with the question, have you ever talked yourself out of being the one? Think about that. Did you have an experience that was calling you to be the one, and you talked yourself out of it? Have you ever had an experience like that? I think many of us have. I remember one experience when I was young, driving across Midwest in the middle of a snowstorm. It was late at night, and the visibility was very poor. And as I was driving along this road, there was no other traffic. There was this person out like this. And I didn't stop. Now that was 30 years ago, but it haunted me. It haunted me that I failed to be the one when there was the voice that said you could stop. And in many ways, that inspired me to really open myself to seeing that You know, I, as a part of my purpose, I've been called to be the one in so many ways in my life that I recognize it all is, it is all connected to that moment. And so if you can find a place where you connect to your moment where you fail to be the one, and use that moment to bring a sense of presence to whatever you're having, and always be open to being able to know that I'm here to make a difference. And when that possibility emerges, I'm going to be ready for it. And the second question is share your aspirations for making a difference in any aspect of life or arena within which you're called to make impact. So as we get in touch with our natural sense that I know I'm meant for something, and we really kind of explore that, that begins to open our consciousness, and our higher self begins to convey through us what's possible. And we can activate that by getting heart-centered and asking our heart what is ours to do that can positively impact some aspect of the world. And then finally, complete the following sentence. I know that I am the one unto my life because. I'll tell you, I'll answer it for you right now. Or at least I'll answer for myself. How's that sound? I know that I'm the one unto my life because sometimes I'm stuck. How many of you have ever been stuck in your life? Stuckness is the symptom that you're ready to be the one unto your life. Think about that. God bless you. You are the one.